get us started this morning.
Thank you, Commissioner Bacon. I brought a small packet together for this discussion for everyone. As of July 27th of this month, legislation has changed the use of REIT 2 to be the same as REIT 1. It also took the reporting requirements out of the legislation that we usually do during the budget process, so that that piece of that isn't in there any longer. It also took out the $1 million limit on the use of REIT 1 and 2 for maintenance, and the $1 million limit for the use of REIT 1 or 2 on affordable housing and homelessness. So I've updated the guide to show that information here, and I've also attached the cash flow statements for most of the capital funds that are included in here. The one I don't do is roads, because there's much more roads than there is in other funds. Mm-hmm. So it's a little more difficult to show that cash flow in that fund than it is the other ones. But we do spend quite a bit of time talking about that during the public works session. These, for the commissioners, are the same that are in your book. But for this meeting, I thought it'd be useful to have a separate packet.
Thank you. I have a question, and we can address it at another time. I was looking through this legislation last week, and one of the questions as I read it is why we would not at some point in time just combine our REIT 1 and REIT 2.
In the legislation, I'm sorry, I should have mentioned that as well, they did take out the language about separate funds. So we could combine those, and probably functionally would be easier for the county. And as I'm thinking through, well, how do we do that? We can, we could do it through the budget adoption, but it might be good to have that separate, or we could do it during the budget adoption. One way or another, I think we need to call it out through resolution and then do a transfer to REIT 1 and do away with REIT 2.
Okay. You have an opinion, Commissioner Johnson?
That seems cleaner. Unless we ever think they're going to separate again.
Well, if they changed the legislation, I mean, yeah. I mean, it takes a lot to change it back. So there's already been a lot of energy into it. So I'd be surprised if it changed anytime soon.
I'm grateful to the state. This is the one bright light in a journey of darkness lately. Okay. So shall we talk about the REIT funds for public works?
So the REIT funds, both REIT 1 and 2, is a combination of public works and facilities. There is one item in the REIT 1 that is related to planning, and it's a feasibility study for the Freeland wastewater solution. There's also facilities project management included in REIT 1. The debt service has been paid off, and there's public works admin that's included in this fund as well.
Can you remind me what the Freeland study is?
For the sewer for the Nichols Brothers area.
That's what I thought. Okay. Is that eligible?
I think it's the whole area, and we have to show in the comp plan that we're working toward the solution in Freeland for sewer, or we can't do the zoning and stuff that we need to do there.
Thank you. Second question is because if it was stormwater, I know it would be eligible, but because it's sewer, is it eligible for clean water utility funds, or is it eligible for any other of our funds? Does anybody know?
We could use current expense. I don't think there's money in clean water utility, but okay. We probably could use it.
I'm not aware of the use of clean water utility funds for that purpose. I would have to look at the RCW. There There is a cash flow Shoney's sheet in your packet for clean water utility, and there is about 3.9 to at the high point of 4.4 million in that fund.
Oh,
yeah, there is money there.
That's a lot.
That's why I was asking about that particular one, but I don't, it's our code, Susan. It was a county adoption. It's not an RCW, I think, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So
I can look at the code and see what's allowed.
Okay. I mean, we have capital projects. We have, there's some planning dollars that are in that fund, I think, for water improvements, because I remember public health wanted to do like a clean water plan or something.
There's also some ability in that for infrastructure, but my knowledge of it is infrastructure related to stormwater. So that's why I asked if it, that's why I was trying to remind myself of what the Freeland study was. And then I don't know whether it's eligible because it is a septage study.
Fred, do you have any input on that? You may have have a higher awareness.
I don't think he uses. Oh yeah, you do. Capital.
It's public works and public health, I think.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
The fund basically is supposed to sustain itself. We've got a list of projects that we're looking at doing. Actually, there's about eight of them, nine of them. You've got things like East Harbor Road at Goss Lake Fish Passage. We've got a lot of fish passage culvert type work to be done with clean water utility and stuff. So
okay,
about nine projects on there.
We may want to just put that one on a separate agenda item because it's a separate fund and read.
Yeah, we'll talk about that during our budget session.
Okay.
Okay. But I agree that I do not, I agree. I don't know who I'm agreeing with, but I don't think we want the study on current expense.
It's no not. Currently, it's in REIT 1.
Okay. Just thank you for clarifying.
In the schedules, both REIT 1 and 2, I export the actual projects that are planned. So you'll see a list under 2026 of the projects that were in the capital module that I brought over. And it's the same for REIT 2. The projects were brought over.
And so when you're showing REIT to the end of 2026, you're showing $10 million left at the end of 2026.
If all projects are executed and the revenue comes in as planned.
Okay. Okay, that's good. That is
fund balance.
Yay.
That's well, that's because of the combination.
Right. It's the combination that's making this just be.
Yeah.
Just thrilled. Couldn't be more happy about this. Okay.
What's on, are we on facilities or not yet? I was on page one. Are we on page one?
Well, we had Public Works was the first on our agenda. So is there?
I don't see where Public Works is in here. Just 60. Does anybody help me out?
So in the REIT one schedule, there's Public Works Administration in there.
I see 65, that.
65,000.
Mm-hmm.
REIT 2 really has more of the public works projects that include parks projects. There's facilities projects in there too, and then there's public works there.
Is this? I'm in the wrong spot. Am I on this sheet or I'm somewhere else?
You're
on the.
Let me paginate again like you've been doing in the regular ones.
Yes.
It's okay, Susan. I understand, but it just helps us stay on the same page. So in the third page of our packet, the REIT 2 projects that are public, there's a number of parks projects, right, James?
Correct.
So we've got about $1.1 million in parks projects under REIT 2.
Correct.
And then we have a maintenance rollover, which we've done before.
That's parks maintenance.
Mm-hmm. And then admin there. So what I see from Public Works is that page 3 and then the admin on page 1. Unless I'm missing something.
Are there other things, Fred, that you're planning to use REIT 1 or 2 on?
No, this is our list for 2026. what we're looking at.
Okay.
Do we want to look at a feasibility for a sidewalk along Swantown? It says on the front page, sidewalks eligible. I mean, it's going to happen in 2027. Do you want to get ahead of it now? Because it's not going away. So we could put it on there now as like starting the feasibility, start getting it on a list, then it would be eligible for IRTPO funds and different types of funds.
Okay.
I mean, I just think we can at least do some, spend some time figuring out what the barriers are.
And on page 3, we have miscellaneous deep water boat ramp feasibility, and we have $0 associated with that. It's important to me that this not go away. I had wanted us to, that's why I've made a big push for that being brought into some kind of conversation about that here in 2025. And here we have 25, 26, nothing being spent on that. I think the TIP includes it, something in 25 or 26.
Does it?
So I think the TIP should be reflected in this.
Up above, under parks, there's the Ucelati boat ramp upgrade.
Yeah, I'm talking about the one down in Robinson Beach, Mutiny Bay boat ramp. That's going to be the big expensive one. It's the $10 million boat ramp.
Yeah, I think we put them in. Whatever. When we did the initial discussion, we had both of those two boat ramps. We had both of those two boat ramps in the initials. You know, we had that initial study. What was it, Commissioner?
Yeah.
And we listed both of those boat ramps, Robinson Road and Ucelati.
So you're not seeing Robinson listed separate here because the design for Robinson boat ramp is in this current year.
Okay. So we are doing it this year?
We're struggling, but we're working for that, yes.
Okay.
So it's in
And then the construction is in, I believe it's 27, which is why that number is so high at 6 million.
I don't see anything in 27 for deep water. Oh, that's just the feasibility.
So what are you paying for the boat ramp work you're doing this year for Robinson Road? What fund are you paying that out of?
Out of RE2.
So why isn't showing up on the 2025 budgeted?
This list of projects is only for 2026. It's for next year's.
I hear you.
So it doesn't show the entire list.
I hear you. I just think that's probably would have avoided the question that Commissioner Bacon's asking. If we had seen it in 2025, then she would be assured that her community's priority is on the list. So right.
We do have $100,000 in right. DIP for the Mutiny Bay boat ramp replacement in 2026. CIP.
On the 2026. So you can pay for it with REIT?
That would be REIT funds.
So we need to add that.
Put it in.
Put it back.
Okay.
Okay.
We just missed it. What's happening?
Now, also, I just want to remind us that the other things that can go on REIT are things like law enforcement facilities, administrative facilities, judicial facilities, technology infrastructure related to capital facilities. So things that I want to just point out that we have a lot of money until we don't. Mm-hmm. And we don't the minute we start saying law enforcement facilities. Well, I mean, if we don't know where we're going to put all of the upfront jail costs, we can put them here. Mm-hmm. And that'll be a bit of money. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it's a, let's randomly say for the sake of easy math, $100 million project, architectural fees will be what, 10% of that project? So we're at $10 million in architectural fees before you even get to a full, you put a nail in the ground.
If the county elects to float a bond.
Which we will elect to do.
The bond language can include reimbursing those costs.
Right, but you have to have them up front.
Right.
It's the issue. It's that, and we wouldn't do full schematics without an approved, but you'd have to do some kind of schematic design. You're going to have to do some site work. You're going to have to, I mean, you know, in terms of like feasibility and all of that.
You have to show the citizens so they'll vote for it.
I mean, there's going to be costs up front, and those costs have to come from somewhere. I mean, I bet we're $1 million to $1.5 million into the project before we get a yes. And if we get a no, we're out the money until we get a yes. Man, I hope that the community is understanding the need, but it's also going to be a price tag and they're going to vote with their pocketbooks too.
Of course.
So I just want to make sure we're understanding the full scope of what REIT has to do. Also, for what it's worth, I still kind of am on page one a little bit. Just it's for our what it's worth thing. I'm not in favor of the county using REIT funds for affordable housing and homelessness programs. I appreciate the expansion, but we have dedicated funds for that purpose. And the legislature, in its quest to solve a singular problem without looking at GMA, which is its underlying problem, has opened up almost all of the funds that we have, different funds we have for the creation of housing. The problem is with that is you can dilute the funds that you have only for specific purposes. And so I just want to caution, I just want to put my own voice of caution out there that like we can do it with rural county economic development funds, but those funds really are infrastructure, one of our few infrastructure sources. This is very much one of the few sources we can use for facility type improvements, some of the capital improvements we're trying to do, and it's the only place we put parks. So we're not going to put parks on the homeless housing funds in human services. It's very important, I think, that culturally we are cautious about looking at all these sources of funds for that particular solution. That I feel that way, just because there aren't other funding sources for all these other government things.
I agree. At least at this point in time, we have money in the sales tax. We have money in our CEB. There's other places we have the money. So we don't, at least in 2026, probably 2027, we don't need to be looking at REIT for affordable housing. Who knows what the future will hold.
Those policy type decisions from the board, I think we should codify or state in the budget message somewhere, so that when we're talking about this in future years, we can harken back to that. Yes,
I'm in agreement.
Okay.
That where this board is choosing not to use the affordable housing funds because we need it for county operations, we have a slim allowance for county operations.
Okay, now sorry, I didn't mean to derail us. It's a good expanded use, but with expanded use comes community pressures. And what community never understands, because they don't work here every day, and nor should they have to understand this, is the operational costs of county government. Mm-hmm. And we do understand that. And so therefore it's important, I think, to just get some parameters and sidebars around some of this so that public pressure doesn't look at this and say, well, that's a solution. No. It's a solution for problems that don't have other funding solutions.
Can REIT be used for staffing?
Well, that's an interesting question, because one of the things that changed, if you look under maintenance section, it says maintenance of, operation of, and service support for existing capital projects.
So what I'm putting out here is the staffing for facilities, the staffing for the youth facility, maybe even some staffing in the sheriff's office. I'm just wondering if some of those things we could use REIT for.
How would staffing in the sheriff's office align with maintenance and
Judicial facilities is included in here. I'm stretching. I know.
I but the judicial facilities would still be managed under facilities.
It's so these funds are already supporting staff for project management and parks. So we are paying for personnel through that, through transfers from these funds to the applicable funds.
Current makes expense. Sense to me. That makes sense to me.
Yep.
So the staffing costs on here?
They show as
admin.
Admin and also facilities project management on rate one.
Could we put all of and the facilities department in REIT to pay for that staff in REIT? Because everyone in facilities works on maintaining our buildings in one way or another.
I
think that's, it's so cyclic though with REIT, there's such a drawdown. I don't know.
I'm just trying to get us through 2026.
Yeah, I
know.
Right. I appreciate the thought.
I think I'd like to bring the numbers forward on all of the staff. And it actually, if you turn to the facilities section, you'll see what the staffing is there. And it would be less the 246,000 transfer there. So it's already funding part of that staff there. I mean, I believe that the guidance allows it.
I mean, I'd like to put everything in facilities. For every single piece of it and read.
I don't disagree. I just would check with the auditor because I don't know if there's any supplantation language in the RCW on this. I don't know. You know, I want to make sure we don't get ourselves into a corner. And then I don't want to find ourselves, if REIT goes south, having that much pressure on REIT that we have to lose half our facility staff because we haven't planned.
Well, we could bring them back into
I didn't read any supplantation language in the new REIT statute.
Okay.
The red line version. There's nothing in there about that.
If we refocus on the Freeland water wastewater feasibility study and Freeland water and sewer continues to opt out of participation in the sewer part of their jobs and responsibilities. We are the entity responsible for infrastructure.
We are.
So although there would be some taxing that you would do, or not taxing, but fees that you'd do to have people pay for their, you know, they're not going to come up with the money to put that in, which means that we would have to have enough ability to demonstrate that we could front load a portion of that project to get that infrastructure in. And I would check with planning. Emily would know more. But what I worry about is if we draw this down too much, we're not going to show financial feasibility for some of those infrastructure projects. And I think
and the jail.
And I think that's part of what we have to do, is not just demonstrate what our need is, but also demonstrate how we're going to pay for some of these things. So the only caution I would have is that if we start putting operations on these funds, this is the fund that we point to a lot of times to say, this is the source of revenue that we would use to pre-capitalize a project before we would get either ratepayers to start paying or a bond passed, or I mean, this is the funding source we're using right now to demonstrate how we're going to fund capital projects in the comp plan. See what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, totally.
So I would worry a little bit about too much operational pressure on this fund, because we need it to show how we're going to meet our level of service with our capital expenditures.
Even in the comp plan, I see what you're saying. These are the kinds of funds we do long-term forecasting of fund balance, right, Susan?
Yes.
And we don't always do long-term forecasting of operational expenses. We don't run those out 6 years in advance.
Correct.
So we have to be able to have a healthy forecast of funds that we put on capital projects for our TIPs, CIPs, We have to have those fund balances forecasted out far longer than we have to with our operational challenges.
I do think we could sign.
Go ahead.
I do think we could say like one time. So if you have a particularly bad year, you could say we're going to put this staff on this for one time. Like you could make a note of that and then revisit the following year to see if you can pull it onto current expense so it doesn't live here. I think we can do something like that. And like if it was literally like a layoff or pull on this fund for a year or two, we could pull on this fund for a year or two. But I think we would really need to be cautious about just a mental shift to operationally, this fund starts supporting too much operations. I think that would be the risk. But I think if you're in a crisis, it's an option on the short term.
Would you also consider an option to put the special projects manager on this fund? Because we have a couple of large special projects with both a comp plan Freeland study and with the law and justice planning.
I think they're on there.
Are they? So they're
the facilities project manager, but nothing from planning.
Yeah.
But there's also,
Public Works. Yeah.
Or Public Works. Okay.
We've purchased a number of buildings over the last number of years. And the Bayshore one is going to be up and going pretty quick, right? Every time you purchase a new building, you need custodial work in that building. There's other things that are associated, expenses that are associated with this. So it would make sense to me that we need to consider how we're going to continue to pay for that additional. We have to have additional custodial help, I think, in order. Well, you have to tell us, but I think that in order to cover all of these additional.
Anything things. Above what we're doing now or that building, yes, I think we would need at least half time, but we can, we're covering now. So we're okay, we're a good place, but if there's a new jail space, then absolutely that side's gonna plus up quite a bit.
Just custodial in the facilities budget is $560,000. Doesn't include separate like facilities maintenance, the maintenance of the building. That's a separate section. Mm-hmm. So just custodial is 600,000, 560,000. What did I say?
Yeah, 560. Yeah.
560 on REIT one.
Well, right now
it's in current expense.
In current expense.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm trying to get things off current expense. Yeah.
Definitely have to consider your maintenance aspect of all these buildings. Got more now. Mm-hmm. So you still got to think what you have.
Right.
If you add to it, you need more maintenance staff. So
yeah. Well, I think we should keep it in our back pocket as we get into the budget and see where we are. And then if we start putting operations on there, I think we need to treat it like fund balance, where we say we review this every year to get it back on current expense. And
I would agree with that.
So that again, future boards don't think, oh, well, this is where we fund all this. No, we try to keep it on current expense and use this fund really for those
unusual those
capital type of projects that we've got to have a plan to pay for.
So rather than moving staff, I would suggest you continue to declare it as a transfer each year because you reconsider that each year.
Yeah, that's I think fair. That's right.
Okay.
I don't think it's an option we should take off the table. I just think it should be our option of last resort.
And it is limited up to 35% of the available funds not available revenue. It says available funds. So that means fund balance.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So opposite. So say that again. I want to make sure I capture it. You said operations or staffing can only utilize up to 35%. I'll go back to the right page.
Available funds.
Yes. Okay.
So this feasibility study, Freeland Wastewater Solution of $150,000, is this a public works function? Is the public works doing this study? Come on up, Emily.
Is it planning?
Emily's doing the study. Is that what I see? Because she loves things like
that. Talk about it. I just want to know who it is. We need to blame when it doesn't happen.
Yes.
So, praise when it does.
So the Freeland feasibility study, we will be trying to get grants through the State Department of Ecology. However, the timeline is not the best with the state because we would have to apply by September 5th of this year to get funding in 2027. And as you know, we're a little swamped right now. So to get a perfect feasibility study package ready by this September is going to be a tight turnaround. We don't know if it'll be possible for this year. However, with ecology, you apply for grant and loans at the same time, and then they determine what the best package for the county is. So sometimes they offer you a mix of both grants or loans that do require a match with county dollars. So for the feasibility study right now, we're saying REIT, but the county would be looking for grants.
Okay, good. Good to know. Okay.
Kim.
Do you need anything from us to help you to try to put that package together, knowing that it's going to be very difficult and there's no expectation?
There is a workshop today that I'm going to attend to learn exactly what we need to do as a county to do a feasibility study. You
Okay.
can get funding for planning and design of a wastewater treatment plant, and then you can also get funding for the actual construction of the
That's
plant.
DOE.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Is this infrastructure likely to support AMI affordable housing?
Yes.
Let me noodle on that. I think I may have another source of funding.
Okay, yes. The Public Works Board with the state. This is one of the grant options. There are nine different grants and it's one application, so it's very easy for counties and cities to
Oh,
apply.
so even if I identified the other ones within Commerce, you've already got those because there are nine of them and it's one Commerce application.
It's one ecology application, but if you do come up with other options, we will definitely hear them. But when I went to the,
I have to check on something.
yeah, when I went to the infrastructure conference last year, this is the big wastewater and stormwater grant you can apply to get funding. It has the largest.
I'll ask the question and then get back to you.
Okay,
I'm
sounds
not
great.
sure I'm right.
Good. Thank you.
Is there any other questions on that? I can.
Think we're good.
Okay.
So Public Works, you didn't have anything more you wanted to share with regard to their our refunds question?
You have anything? I
Any
don't think so.
questions of Public Works? Jana, Jill? Yeah.
On the pickleball courts in Camino, my understanding is that there's some private fundraising happening there.
Correct.
We expect a donation to come in.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so that would be $350,000 coming into REIT to support that, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so I'll add that to the revenue.
Whoa. I'm whoaing the pickleball courts here for a second. Hold on while I get myself in the right spot.
So on page, it's the third page.
Third page in.
Middle of the page.
Camino, pick this starts with Camino. I thought when we had talked about this that we were saying that there were upfront costs that the county wanted to pay for and felt like it had to pay for in order to have quality control. So, for example, we would pay for the design and engineering of the facility. And so that yes, they would pay that they we were basically saying to the community, you would pay for the construction, but we would retain ownership, which means funding in my mind, because people who pay feel like they own, right? That we were retaining ownership of the site selection, the engineering, the design, that piece of it was ours.
They're funding fundraising for capital construction.
Construction.
And we were, I'm in agreement with Jill, but I wasn't sure I was remembering correctly. So thank you, Commissioner. I think we really wanted a strong sense of control over design and engineering. And then once we have the design and engineering, their fundraising goes into the construction, permitting, all of that. But we wanted to retain 100% because we've seen issues, right? The lights, for example. We want to
Oh,
retain.
absolutely. And our position from the very start is we retain ownership. We perform the work. We get the design performed, and we drive all that. All they were doing was raising the money for that
So
project.
then we're not going to put revenue into REIT to cover
I don't know what the 350,000 was for specifically.
So as our as per our last work session, the 350,000 was for like a phase one.
Yes.
And they didn't like that. And so we have changed it with the new CIP numbers that will be coming to the board. It's now
just
220.
I get that they had an opinion.
It's grant money.
But I've been having conversations that the board retains authority on what gets approved. And we welcome and recognize their input on that. So I just think I want to, if we can afford it, I want to retain that we pay for and keep 100% authority over the initial design and engineering phase. And honestly, it's going to take them a year to fundraise for the construction anyway. A capital campaign is anywhere from 1 to 5 years on any major project. I've done them, right? So I think I'm in agreement with Commissioner Johnson that I would want to retain the county because we own the long-term liability, the long-term maintenance costs, the long-term any failures. So I want the fundraising that they do not to be our design and engineering, but it goes to the, and remember they're fundraising not just for the initial construction, they're working to set up a fund. We've talked about this for ongoing maintenance of the pickleball courts as well, because they bring in an additional cost for us on an ongoing basis. It's not, you don't have one and done. So the agreement we have with the community is they will fundraise to build, and then fundraise to set aside a fund to help maintain operations. So I'm in 100% agreement with Commissioner Johnson that if we can, we pay for the initial design and engineering to retain 100% control.
Yeah, I think that we need to be really clear and really clean about this because this is establishing a template. We have, you know, at least one person wants to build a pickleball court on county property and Whidbey Island. We need to be really clear about how we do this, and so we can be consistent going forward. I agree with both of them.
I want to make sure that donation matches what the work we're doing too, so we can work.
Well, there's no, until we have the construction estimates, that will be what the cost. We can't begin construction. We can get the design and engineering done under our dime. And then we begin construction. What our next phase in a capital plan like this is to set, you know, goals, fundraising goals, so that we don't begin construction till certain fundraising goals are met. And that's the conversation I've had with the team there.
So
they understand that we have a whole timeline that we're working from.
Is design and engineering?
Or James has had that conversation, actually. He's been
doing this meeting. So it'll be changed in the next CIP version for 220.
Okay. So the CIP needs to be updated in the proposed budget as we go as well, so that we don't adopt a budget that has the wrong numbers.
And I'm going to be on the record of I'm a plan A, plan B person, and I'm on the record being down there saying, if we can build the courts, but we don't raise enough money to cover them, then let's build the courts.
Right.
And not hold up this project for the perfect. Let's not throw out the good in search of the perfect. I know some people disagree with me on that. We must have covered courts. 100% love to do that. But if the fundraising doesn't match the goal of a covered court, I want to be on the record of saying, let's build the courts. And then phase plan B can be to cover them. That's my personal opinion. You may or may not agree with me, but the public, there's even difference in the ranks of what people would like to just see more courts. And some people say no courts till we cover them. We are in charge of that decision.
Yeah, we are.
Correct. And I agree with you that, and that's why I approached it as a phase one, phase two, you know, build the pickleball courts, then cover them. The Camino Pickleball Association
that's where
does not agree with us.
Some members of the Camino Pickleball Association do not agree with us.
But regardless of if they agree or not,
that's our decision.
It's not their authority to tell you how to do it.
No.
And that's partly where the board's saying we need to retain control of the site, the engineering, the planning, the liability becomes ours. The ongoing maintenance becomes ours. Pickleball will, in the course of the history of the universe, fall out of favor. There will be a time period where people will not fundraise for pickleball, and the liability of the roof and the maintenance and the costs associated with that will be ours. And so what we have to think about is not when the passion's there, but when the passion isn't. What is the best infrastructure for us? And that is the decision the county will make. And then the community can pay for it
or not. Or not. If they say, well, we're not going to play, then this project stops.
Sure.
And that's fair. They can absolutely have that, retain that ability to say, we're not going to play if you don't do it our way. Okay, we'll welcome you back to a conversation in the future.
They can buy
a park. But this is a board, this is a community conversation and a board decision.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I want to be really clear about that, because I'm the one who's going to get it.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll have some costs associated with the pickleball court. We won't just have 100% revenue offset.
And then just to be clear, it's not, because I get this too, it's not just where is the cost we already had in a CIP before this ever happened, that in 26, 27, we were going to rip out and resurface the existing tennis courts / pickleball courts. Is that included here?
It's a separate line item.
Where?
It's not listed on this list because it shows up in
subsequent years.
In 27, I think.
That's fair. I think that's what you told me, that we were going to push it out a year because, you know, that's the other piece, is that is a 20-year-old surface that needs to get rebuilt completely.
Yeah, I kind of wish we had a little more detail, simply because we're looking at $1 million in 2026 on parks, and we're looking at $6.5 million on parks in 2027.
Well, that's your boat launch.
I'd be thrilled if that was my goal, but I doubt that it is, Commissioner.
It's going to take you 10 years to get permits on that.
I know. So anyway.
I can provide the full schedule, but I have to use these numbers.
Thank you, okay. James, by the way. I think that that's the REIT or the CIP, right?
Yeah,
it is.
It's a CIP item.
Is everything on CIP on layered onto this fund source or not?
Say that again.
Is everything in our CIP on REIT?
Yes.
Okay.
For parks.
Yes. And I just want to publicly thank you. You've really gone above and beyond in working with the community on a tough thing. So, and keeping everybody involved, not just, you know, you've got the dog people and you've got the little leaguers and you've got,
you know,
the people who want to have an opinion, no matter what the issue is. You've done a really good job, James, in keeping everybody engaged.
For an island that doesn't get any attention from the county, it just sounds like they were getting a lot of attention.
Yes, thank you, James.
So for 2027, there's two major initiatives.
Mm-hmm.
One is the Coronet Bay Dock.
Okay.
One is the Mutiny Bay Ramp.
It is! All right.
So, almost 2.8 million for the Mutiny Bay Ramp, and then 3.3 for Coronet Bay Dock.
Excellent.
And everything else is in the hundred thousands.
Okay.
Or thousands for projects, but those are the two major projects.
And all of these boat ramp projects, including the Ypsilanti in 2026, are going to slip if there's permit hiccups, which there will be.
So that's what I was just going to ask. You have permits for,
no,
I mean,
no.
for either of them, or just for the deep water boat dock?
We don't have permits for any of them.
I'm telling you, this is the time to try to go for those permits.
We're not
from the Army Corps of Engineers, because Army Corps of Engineers is like all federal agencies, is kind of falling apart. So
that only will slow it down more.
Well, if we wait for them, if we say, oh, I mean, nobody was there to answer.
Do we have a design to permit?
We do not.
Send them a thing.
We don't have it. We don't have, Melanie. We don't have a design to permit. We have to send something in.
What are they going to do to us? What will they do to us if we send a letter? I really want to know. If we send a letter that says we need to have a response from you in 6 months or we will deem this approved, what will they do?
You really want to find out.
Yeah, actually.
If we violate a federal rule, we can be subject to 10 years suspension from any federal funding.
Do we get a lot of federal funding?
Uh-huh.
No, I don't think we get a lot.
We get a lot of federal funding in transportation.
Transportation? A lot.
More than gas tax?
Capacity type funding.
Yep. Well, first of all, we would just write a letter back and say there was nobody working in the Corps of Engineers that time.
Okay.
Well, I don't understand the fear in which we operate a bureaucracy that is just like people say to us, you work for me, right? That effing federal government works for us. So if they're not performing, who gave them authority to say, hey, you're going to hold this up because you don't have a division of this anymore? That is a consequence of today's decision. You don't get to regulate things that you don't staff up to regulate. The federal government is making a choice to deregulate things through lack of participation in the regulatory process. Just like when we have code enforcement, if we don't go out there and code enforce, then the people get away with it. I don't understand why we're so fearful. The government has basically told us they're not playing in the permitting world anymore. That's what they've said by firing everybody. That's what I think. And I think we should roll the dice. And if the federal government doesn't like the consequences, then they should rethink their actions. But this administration has told us they do not value these things. So we should move under this administration to get through the permitting process. This isn't a four-year pump the brakes, wait and see thing. This is a we don't care administration. Now, we do care. We're not going to do it wrong. But we also don't need to wait for somebody to push a piece of paper around who doesn't even exist in the system anymore. Unless someone disagrees with me, I think this is a very clear message from above that these things aren't valued. So why are we going to value them and be frustrated we can't get local solutions when the federal government has said, we don't need this? Okay. If somebody's willing to sell Yosemite Park, they're not going to care about the Cornett Bay permit. At least in the next 3.5 years, they're not. I say, go for it. Give it all you've got.
I agree.
You'll be speaking with Congressman Larson on Monday.
That's true.
You can talk about that.
It's true. I can.
I'm not trying to like push off a cliff. I'm saying the barrier to your road has been removed. Drive through. Also, Fred, I don't think you quite understand my skills at navigating the prison system. And if you end up in it, I am so capable of getting money on your books now, you have no idea.
Yeah.
I know.
This conversation, my job is to keep you out of jail and not go to jail.
First of all, even if you're only going
to try it,
I'm only going to be in for 6 months, so it's all right.
I'm just trying to keep you out of jail and myself along with you.
I'm going to need a job soon, and that, you know, they give you food and
trustee in the prison.
She can make license plates.
So, Susan, did you have any other questions?
I didn't.
You didn't? Any other questions for Fred or James? Okay, thanks, guys. So, I mean, you should stick around probably for the rest of this, but I want to move then to information technologies.
So that schedule is the second to the last page.
Mm-hmm. Second to the last.
And it is its own fund. And it is funded from transfers from current expense.
Where is my second to the last page?
You can get you a DVD
slash. It's in the
pack. Oh, I see it. It's not clean. I skipped past it.
Okay. So 20.
Dean?
Yes.
This is all you.
So I think, Dean, you're a little newer to this conversation.
Yes,
because the changes sounds like it kind of opens up technology infrastructure integral to capital projects. So like yesterday when we were talking about internet for the new buildings, right?
Right.
That expense to install and even probably maintain can be a related expense. And so maybe what we would do is rather than put specific costs onto this, we would acknowledge a REIT transfer into IT to just cover new expansion costs and repairs on capital project. So if we do something to a building and there's technology investments that need to happen, technology that goes in, wires that need to be changed, maybe with there are the cloud things, I don't know, don't correct me, because I will send you to jail with Fred. that I think maybe the thing to think about is a REIT transfer into IT, and then IT can manage those costs and projects as they come up associated with the facilities. Because it's going to nickel and dime it to try to list out everything we're putting on it. And really, it's just acknowledging that these facilities have technology infrastructure integral to whatever the projects are.
That's that one we were asking about HAVA. We were talking about cybersecurity, and we talked about HAVA, or it was just yesterday, guys. Help me out here.
Wasn't it?
HAVA or REIT? Is that what we said yesterday?
We said current event.
The cybersecurity for elections and the whole, that's that 5,000 from yesterday. Yeah. I can remember the number. I can't remember it was 5,000. Yeah. And we talked about
insurance reserve
because of cyber. So
thank God, I have notes.
God, I swear. Things like that, where you're adding, and it may be even like as you're building out and you're having to add conduit, right? So as you're adding in conduit for everything to the building, and you bring in that conduit, because buried conduit is going to be more stable in a storm than aerial strings. So all of that should be able to go into these projects.
And as my understanding is that we've been working with facilities for the infrastructure for IT, and it's part of the project. I'm assuming that's been covered by REIT.
So my question is, can we cover any of the cost of doing business of those technology upgrades? So when you have to go to Comcast and say, we need redundancy for the campus over here, we've added this, and they say it's going to cost you X amount of dollars to add that in, can that be applied to REIT?
Yes.
I think so.
The short answer is yes.
I would go back and say I think the cleaner thing to do is basically there's infrastructure related to all of our facilities that we work on every year. And at any given moment, a project change could trigger a technology change. And it seems like a transfer amount that we agreed to from REIT into IT to meet that requirement is probably what would be appropriate, especially if what has changed is reporting requirements. We're not going to spend a bunch of time going back and forth putting specific projects on the fund.
I agree.
We're just acknowledging that infrastructure projects, capital projects, new office locations come with technology costs. Increased this is the servers. Amount that we transfer over.
Yeah, as long as we are making sure we're categorizing those so it's under that 35%, that will just require communication on our part. But
yeah, I mean, I think if we just picked, like if we just said we're $50,000 a year to start or $100,000 a year to start, I'm just throwing out numbers that are easy math, but that's what our transfer amount is, knowing that everybody who sits at a desk has a technology, something associated with their new site, right? And that what that does is that it allows IT to cover those costs associated with capital startup and maintenance of a new facility. Facilities may have it in their startup project, but they don't have it in ongoing.
Yes.
And so it covers that ongoing operational cost associated with a new capital project in a way that's very clean.
And the maintenance is subject to the 35%, but the capital is not, right?
Right. But Brian's saying he puts that in his budget, or should be.
And then you
we
get
do, and it's a little cumbersome because, case in point, we had a control room software issue, and then the invoice came in, and we're like, okay, who's going to pay that? But that would be, as you're saying, Commissioner Johnson, that'd be perfect because that's falls right in their wheelhouse. It would go to them. Initial outfitting would come through us through the main project, the capital outlay, and then the follow-on could be IT, like UPS batteries, things like that.
Is there, Ms. Risk Manager, in this process, because I agree this is simple and clean, but is there any
touch work once, twice, you know, we have to review at authorities or anything we have to do in that process to assure that things have that appropriate level of eyes on the project and transfers. Is that just you?
So I think that the transfer should be supported by what you see in the IT budget. So if you're saying this transfer is for, say, internet.
The wires. Let's just stay with the wires over there.
If it's related to that, then we can see that in the IT budget. So it's defendable.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm asking.
So yeah, so that's where I would want to tie that in.
Okay.
And that we're very clear on what that transfer is on our schedules mm-hmm. as well.
Okay.
And then I think that if we pick an amount that's defensible and doesn't pull the fund down too far, that transfer can just be kind of an ongoing.
It would show. I'll show it on the schedule.
Okay. Yeah.
So am I understanding correctly, what you're talking about is anything related to network communication and funding the ongoing cost of that through REIT?
I think, first of all, you shouldn't quote me on what I'm talking about related to technology, because my understanding is limited to desktops and wires, right? And I get that there's more to it. So I don't want you to limit it based on the words I know. What I'm thinking is that we would just do a transfer over from this fund to IT, knowing that every single year there are technology infrastructure costs integral to whatever capital project. And the thing about capital projects is they're point in time, but then they exist ongoing. It's always an integral cost associated with that capital project, right? It's not a one and done. So for example, if we picked the new building in Oak Harbor, all of the technology costs associated with the new building in Oak Harbor are integral to that capital project.
Right.
And so the transfer over would be justified by just those kind of operational things that go on. So you don't have to build, unless I'm wrong, you don't have to build to it. It just goes into your budget as budget capacity to cover those types of things.
So Ryan wouldn't have to include those technology pieces in his estimate.
He would probably need to say, this is what the initial startup costs are mm-hmm. going into a building.
Yeah, right.
But then once those startup costs are built into the building, all of the subsequent things associated with that building operationally are just covered by IT in that transfer. Mm-hmm. So really, it's just budget capacity for you. That's all this is saying we're going to put this money in there so that you're not saying, well, this was an added cost that happened because of this that needs to get built into the operation budget and you're competing with current expense on a supplemental list. You just know that there's transfer money that comes in to absorb those types of costs. And then if what happens is we don't have enough money in that transfer, you're talking to Susan about what the appropriate transfer amount is. And then for us, that just shows up and we're not having those types of conversations again about, well, this is what it costs to have 8 telephones in a building that you acquired and staff people at on an ongoing basis. That's not a supplemental request. It's covering yesterday's conversation a little bit. Yeah,
and I'm trying to understand where the boundary between the two are. So let's take the Bayview building.
Okay.
What you're saying. So as part of that, there's going to be networking infrastructure that is put in there.
Yeah.
And we also had to have a network connection put in, and we're going to do the wiring within the building.
Yeah.
And the initial cost for Comcast to service that location for the internet connection is being paid out of REIT with the project beginning.
Yes. Right.
I understand that part, but my question is okay, do we continue using REIT going forward to pay for the ongoing network connection cost down the road and for the switch in for, you know, the networking infrastructure, or is that something that's going to
this is saying you can, And what we're saying is what would happen in you it from your side of the, I mean, I see it as pictures, so that's why it's hard for me to describe it. What would happen is we take money from this fund, this REIT fund, and it would transfer into your budget. You would absorb those costs as just operational costs. You just have additional budget capacity to absorb those costs.
The board would say 100,000, right? And that goes into your budget for operation of telephony and network.
And I don't think it's exclusive to the Bayview building when you're talking.
Right. Exactly.
Operation of
right.
ongoing.
Right. Well, so then those would build up those. I mean, over time, those costs keep building up, right? But it what it's doing is moving operational capacity into your budget. So you don't need to be thinking like, okay, I have money to cover this and I have money to cover this. Those expenses, once they're initially put in, become your expenses. They become your operating expenses. You don't need to think about how am I going to pay for this. This transfer is how you're going to pay for it. And it's how you're going to pay for it ongoing. For that and all, it's just basically putting money in your account.
Which I'm not going to complain about.
Right. But you don't have to be the way this is written. To me, it doesn't sound like you have to be specific to each project. What you have to do is recognize like operationally, if we get to a point where it's like, okay, this transfer really isn't enough to absorb new ongoing expenses that are being put on IT, then we have a conversation about, is it current expense that's increasing? Is it REIT that's increasing? What's driving all of these costs? But what this is doing is offsetting current expense and new costs so that you can operate your budget.
And I can see that, you know, to start off, but I guess what my question is, what happened down the road? So what we have a budget of, I think it's close to $150,000 a year as far as our connectivity expenses for the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Are you proposing that this then goes to pay for that?
Well, it'll be Susan who'll make the decision about
okay.
the fund.
I should talk with Susan.
Yeah, just but put it in your budget so that we know that we should expect this expense, and then Susan will decide which fund is going to come out.
And it'll
okay. So work with Susan,
and it'll be in our CIPs.
Which
so you get we so we get when we talk about indirect, for example, all the different funds that are out there. Pay an indirect fee. They all get billed a certain amount of money if it's a specialized fund. And that indirect fee goes into current expense, right? So if you've got a special technology fund that comes from the federal government, we're going to assess that, let's say, what, 9% or something. And 9% of that money that comes into this county gets taken off the top and it gets put into current expense. Then current expense, the big fund of current expense, pays IT. Now, we're not saying this indirect cost is from this particular fund and it utilizes this many dollars for IT services and then we bill that indirect it directly for your services. We just sweep it, put it into a fund, and then it gets dispersed out because we know our expenses are higher than what we could probably put on that indirect fee, but it's our guesstimate of what to take from each of those funds. Just are you tracking me or not yet?
I think I'm okay. Tracking what you're saying.
So this is the same thing. Like if you think of your budget as a current expense budget, it's money that moves in there that's just operational capacity for you. Okay. You don't have to build just like our indirect suite doesn't have to justify every expense under indirect. We take it. We put it in current expense and it just gets distributed out as current expense. This is an allocation that goes to your budget and it will get spent as the IT budget. It's not a special fund that you have to bill to. There's not expenses associated with it. It's literally in current. It's in your operating budget, just like indirect is in ours.
Yeah.
Did that help or make it worse?
I think it helps to understand. So there's not something that is specifically directed to, it's just another source of funding for our budget
that goes into your general operating budget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we justify part of it as part of the technological infrastructure.
Right. Right. The only way it's going to be an issue for you is going to be if you want to buy a new thing, the commissioners may say, what fund is going to pay for this? And so then if it's something that's going to be paid for out of REIT or out of current expense, we'll be looking to you to tell us where the dollars going to come from for this new thing we hadn't planned on.
And
so I think that's right. I think that's right. What I would say is that those bigger capital type expenses would sit on this report like we're getting right now. So it would say IT, new server for this building.
Mm-hmm.
That would be separate from your dollar amount transfer into your fund. So we're transferring operating dollars from REIT into technology. We're saying this is eligible and we're putting it in there. But if there's something that lives outside of that, where you're like, this building requires this type of infrastructure to make it work, and it's not in the capital plan, it's really a special project or technology piece separate from operations, it would need to go in this plan. You would have to talk to Ryan, the new Ryan, or you'd have to talk to Fred and say, okay, how much REIT capacity in there? Obviously, Susan, how much REIT capacity is in there? And then you'd be fighting for your position on the REIT schedule, capital schedule. But this, we're talking about, but that's different than operational transfer.
That's for special, weird, off, one-off things.
Yeah.
I feel like I made it worse.
No, I understand it, and we'll work through the details of that.
Susan, I'm as we're talking about all of this, and the this is actually a pretty exciting conversation, because that's what this new legislation opens up for us, is that kind of how do we make this work. The one thing I'm cognizant of, and I think we at some point need to blend one and two, like we've talked, but I also think, as we've done before, we're going to have to keep the capital and the maintenance and operations in separate buckets, because we have to manage the not to exceed up to 35%.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I understand that.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I saw it visually, because I'm very visual.
And I've had to do that through all the past budgets as well, is measure that maintenance cost against the
total. Do you keep it in a separate line item?
It's separated in the plans.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. I just got sort of this nervous, and I think in buckets, or buckets in and out. We're pouring water in your bucket.
Separately too.
We're going to pour some water in your bucket.
So, Susan, did you have anything else with regard to information technologies?
I do not.
Jill and Janet, do you have any other questions or comments about that?
No, this is exciting.
Okay.
So do you anticipate amending this REIT proposal for 2026?
We could probably use that money for
some of your supplementals.
It wouldn't be so much for the supplementals other than for the restoring of the fiber between this building.
Right.
And, but the other thing that occurs to me that we could use it for is the phone system.
I was thinking about that too.
Nice.
Okay. Because that's on your ER&R plan, isn't it, that we have to upgrade it?
Yeah, it's on our CIP plan that it's due to be upgraded next year.
I use ER&R.
So you can go to work and see if there's any capital alterations to REIT that we have to that we would consider in approving a capital plan. Plus the transfer.
Yeah, we have to be careful about where it sits too, so that if it's something that's attached to the building and we're supporting that, it's not the transfer to go here.
Yeah.
In the IT fund.
Yeah.
So we'll have to be really clear on, okay, where are we coding that? Where are we planning for that replacement? And where does the money need to go?
Yeah. And phones are a capital cost. They're not operational. The initial cost that you have to do to replace all those phones, those are capital. So they can go in that above the line and not operations below the line.
Yeah.
Correct.
And that's, you know, we have that in our capital improvement plan because of that. Phones are one that I think would be a great one. I have a little more problem like with the servers that Jill was talking about. Servers aren't dedicated to a building.
Well, yeah, so don't use my words.
Yeah, I know. I'm just okay. saying, I'm trying to decide what this would apply to.
Computer, internet, if we have if
printer, I know that word.
If we have to add a larger server because we are serving more locations, the increase, the upgrade of the server is in service to our capital project expansion.
Right, but we wouldn't.
You don't have to ascribe it to any one location. You just say, we are increasing the number of sites we serve, and that requires increased complexity in the closet. Let's just call it, we'll let it stay in the closet. And I don't mean to be inappropriate. Yeah, sorry.
We can discuss the more of the details later.
Okay. Yeah.
So.
I just think these are legitimate ways to think about that. And then the test will be in our next audit.
Okay, so let's move on to facilities. Ryan, hi.
Hi.
Bye.
Well, first off, thank you for having this conversation. Thank you, Susan, for preparing this. This is outstanding. Thank you. So during my budget discussion, this came up from this. And talking about jail and how we're going to fund it in the CIP and the drawdown. So that's really where we need to prioritize when that money is going to be placed in the CIP. Because 2026, I didn't have anything for cell block updating. It started in 2027. If we need to move that forward, that's a discussion I'd like to have now so we can adjust that. And then Commissioner Johnson mentioned that we'll probably need, you know, upwards of $10 million, just as a number throwing out there. But we're not going to have that. But how do we do that? So that's really my struggle with this year's CIP, coming up with supporting the bond justice effort. So the things I placed in my 6-year CIP for 2026 are, there's really no fluff in there. That's stuff that we need to do. The law and justice building HVAC has been on and off for months now, actually the last year and a half. And I treat that as a commitment of funds. It would be the county's commitment of funds, hoping that we get an energy grant, upwards of $1 million. But
who's taking that piece of this? Can you, when you're going through this CIP, who's taking that piece of this project management work over from you? Who have you assigned this to?
That would be Laura Beard.
Laura's got it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just going to make a note as we go.
Okay.
Who's bird dogging what?
Yeah.
Good point.
And then the question about, say, the elections office, we have $300,000 in there. I don't know if that project is going to happen. That's another board discussion or board decision. But we've been talking about it for the last 3 years, so I left it on there as a possibility.
And that's $300,000.
It is.
And that's the coroner situation. What happens then if the coroner moves out? If they move out, is there money? There's not money in here to redo the clerks, right?
That starts in 2027.
Okay. So,
yes.
Okay. So the clerks in 2027.
Yes.
Okay.
And then security upgrades, that's for cameras placed at all the FRCs, the old FRC.
Yeah.
On First Street and Oak Harbor, and then south, we don't have any security system really in place at any of them. So
that's, and is Walker just doing that, or who?
She's been working on that, yes, this year. So really all the REIT 1 funds that we have, Laura's doing that, and then REIT 2 I assigned to Dane Kinney.
And what's testing and service contract?
That's kind of the thing we were just talking about with Dean. So
is that an IT thing or a you thing? So we're only paying for it once.
So we're doing both. It's been a kind of a strange situation on who's going to pay for what, because we cover all of the infrastructure for IT. Basically, if we have to change a UPS battery or have to provide money for, we do that for the jail.
With the jail.
Yeah, for the jail. And then for any justice systems repairs, it comes out of there. So that's kind of the same concept.
How is that different than emergent needs?
Emergent needs would be I have an air handler that dies, that's where we draw that from, like on Lawn Justice. It could be $26,000. So we did have emergent needs for the jail and for the rest of the county. I brought it down to 100,000 just in one pot to kind of fix that.
If it's an emergent need, isn't that more of a maintenance item than it is a project?
It is. Yeah.
But you're using, correct. It's kind of like a transfer, like we're putting into IT. You're just looking for $100,000 retransfer to cover emergent operational costs.
Correct. Yes.
Does that work, Susan, or no?
Well, I haven't coded it as a transfer. I didn't have that understanding that it's what we're doing. I thought that they were coding those expenses directly to REIT.
Are you doing that?
It has not been a transfer. No, we're drawing straight from REIT for that, but it.
What would be better?
Yeah.
from an auditor standpoint, it's better to code the expenses where the money's coming from. So if that project is here, those expenses should be coded to REIT.
But that's different than what we just said for IT, where we were saying it would be easy just to put a transfer in there and it just is operational and is budget.
That is true. That is true.
Mm. Yeah. So I'm not weighing in either way. I just think we should be consistent in how we do it.
Historically, that's how we've done it. If that's a change, then just like with IT, we have to support that with actual expenditures. So the audit stickiness would be that we make a transfer to current expense, but then we don't experience the actual expenditures there as much. And the auditors say, well, you transferred this money. Can you show me the expenditures that relate to that? So that's where it gets sticky.
And it is more of a one-time project cost. It's just a really small project. Like I use the air handler. Yeah. So it would be
saying T, which is covering costs associated with new capital projects, which is eligible. We believe is eligible. Because otherwise Dean's questions are appropriate. The where he was like, what do I build to this?
Mm-hmm.
And we were trying to avoid that.
Right. I think that the IT costs are a little more consistent. So mm-hmm. it's easier to point to them. Okay. Where when you have facilities emergent needs, then that's going to come up during the year.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
The testing and service contracts, I see that as an ongoing expense that in that plan too.
So you're going to work with the two of them to figure out whose budget that sits in?
Yes.
It's not going anywhere. It's just whose budget.
Yeah. And where should it sit? What makes the cleanest sense in that?
The emergents are one and done versus ongoing, right?
Right. I was so specifically speaking of, well, we have emergent needs every year. So we see that in the capital plan. There's $100,000 in there for each of the 6 years, as well as under testing and service contracts. There's 76,000 in 26, 83,000 in 27, 92,000 in 28, and then stack the inflation and stacks it up. So those are ongoing expenditures and more of a maintenance type item than they are a capital item.
So maybe you guys can figure out I mean, I feel like that's not us.
Yeah,
we'll doesn't need to be us.
Yeah.
I mean those IT costs are in there also. So if we want to,
we'll work
divvy that out. Yeah.
That's a detail that you don't. Yeah. I don't think that's us.
Yeah.
I have a small question.
Okay.
Whoops.
Go ahead.
My small question is: yesterday we talked about basing cars at North Whidbey. In order to have a single strategy of whether we're doing cars or mileage, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to address that issue of having them not have to drive and then double back. In your expenditures on the second page, you have all these facility projects around parking lots, but nothing up at North Whidbey Family Resource Center, nothing at that location. Is there any expenses, whether it's cars or other things, relating to making that a base for us in terms of how we utilize that space to as a base of operations for the whole county?
You weren't here, Ryan. What happened was,
Dean
let us be aware that he has people, employees who live up in Oak Harbor. Then they have to go serve Camino Island. But if they take a county car, they have to come down to Coopville to get the county car and then go all the way around. And so instead, they're doing mileage on their own vehicle. So we're to the conversation, and I'm sure there's other people in other departments that's probably similar about having cars based up in.
So that they don't lose the worker efficiency of having to spend an hour out of their day or longer to come down to here to pick up a car to go serve Oak Harbor or to serve North Whidbey or to, you know.
And that's what Health and Human Services has done. They've usually kept cars up there in Oak Harbor.
So we were talking about whether we could base cars in Oak Harbor so that increases the efficiency of his team and able to spend, instead of spending an hour driving, they spend an hour extra working. Does that additional parking spaces, is that of any issue?
It could be because the current North Whidbey FRC, they usually have about 6 cars there that are used for various Health and Human Services. There's not a lot of parking there for customers. And then Bayshore is going to be more constrained. Those cars would have to move into the parking lot at night and then move off for clientele to come in. So it's very possible. There is public parking all over across from Bayshore. That's something we'd have to talk to Oak Harbor about if we could have.
And the only reason I'm raising it is if we have to allow an additional cost for parking for if we choose to pursue the strategy, we have to add an additional cost for parking, then you have... you don't have anything for North Whidbey up on this list.
Not in 2026, but yeah, it is
so built
into
that's the only the reason 6-year CIP. And you can figure it out. I just wanted to say, if we're going to be more utilizing more space there for the transport, for the fleet management, then do you have any additional costs affiliated with that up there?
We do. And that's another question I'd like to pose, that we are kind of duplicating efforts having our current REIT too with parking lots, and Public Works does roads.
No,
and
I welcome to the table. This is not, I've already been here. Okay. So the reason that they don't do the parking lots is that their equipment is not designed for that type of, this is what I've been told, because I've asked multiple times why we can't fix our parking lot with our own road crew. That seems crazy to me. We don't do that kind of, this is not intended to be insulting. It's because I don't have a different vocabulary. We don't do that kind of skilled work as it relates to parking lots and the small whatever. And we don't do that kind of work. We usually contract that kind of work out. And what we're like chip sealers but we don't do this kind of work.
Okay, that wasn't going to be my question. I understand that, but we do have a project manager that's in Public Works that works on hot mix asphalt and things like that. So I was wondering if maybe we could share that use of personnel to kind of.
Yeah, there's not a problem with that. I mean, the parking lot stuff that you want to do.
Yeah.
Basically, if we get with Jackie, we can make that part of our contract. But as far as physical staff doing that work.
No,
we don't do that.
Yeah, that's my understanding too.
Commissioner Johnson said it, but
we've always struggled with getting that in our plan with the current staffing we have.
Asphalt project type stuff. If we know in advance, say, okay, we're going to have this extra stuff.
Because that we do have that cost in our project management cost.
Ryan, where is the big fix for this building for the electric system that's going to blow up? Where's that fix?
So that's in this year's. We're still chasing that grant. And we have a meeting today, actually. So we do have the grant. I think it's a $350,000 that we're looking at.
With a $1 million circuit breaker.
We're trying to get a safety fix before the actual electrical upgrade. So it'd be like a safety in place before that actual breaker. So if in case the jail kitchen, the safety would be placed there instead of it tripping the main breaker. That's really where the safety breakdown is. So we're still working on that.
When will you know on that grant? That was a good question. When will you know on that grant?
We should have back very shortly. I mean,
so if it's not there, then it will show up. You'll put it in here.
We will have to, yes.
And
Susan, in our final version, can we see, have everybody fill in 2025, 26, 27, because it helps us track these projects in our mind.
I can create that schedule. What happens is that we will make this a multi-page for each one of these. What I can do is supply the whole list on the backside.
Okay.
So a separate schedule.
I just think we need the capital improvement plan in here, and we could look at this and then look at
that
plan.
That would work.
We just need to, the plan exists. We've seen it before.
Yeah.
Not, and so we just need to reference it in a book.
Either way, that it's just having that reference so we know where we find the projects we're tracking.
So Ryan, did you have anything else?
The jail. We have to make a decision about the jail.
Wasn't that the 1.9 that's in here?
No, that is for the HVAC on the law and justice.
Oh, so in 2026, what we should expect to have is, and I don't know what I'm saying in terms of cost. We need to pick a site, and then we need to do some renderings as to what that could look like on that site, which would mean talking with the town, whichever town, and I don't, like, this is what's hard is I actually don't really know, and you're not here. And so I'm trying to figure out what these costs look like, but by the time we go to voters, we need to do outreach to talk to them about what level of service they're willing to kind of pay for. We need to draw up something that reflects that and have some pretty accurate-ish idea of costs. Mm-hmm. We need to talk with the towns about whatever we need to do. So maybe, I don't know if we would start on permitting, but we definitely need to at least make sure we're not designing something that is not.
Yeah.
I mean, I mentioned to the mayor yesterday our 4-story jail, and she did not care for that. Although it was enjoyable for me to watch her face.
There is a process in the countywide planning policies that we have to follow for essential public facilities.
Oh, there
is. Work together.
So, okay, good.
Yes.
So what so that's all that happens in 2026. So what we need to know is what are the upfront costs of that work?
And is that the communication plan that you're talking about? Or is that just the, like, initial schematic design up to 30%.
Outreach and education on REIT or no? I don't know.
If it goes in the main project, I would say probably, but I'm not.
Is it planning?
It is
planning.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So we would need the communications contract. We would, this is probably going to be, I guess, Jeff, but we would need to know the cost of the communication contract. We would need to know what it would cost us to get to some type of rendering that we would show. Like, we don't need all the wiring, piping, whatever architectural designs, but we need kind of a visual so that they kind of get a concept of what they're going to get.
What we could do is just slide that dollar amount to the left for 2026.
What do you have for 2027 that you would?
$450,000 for cell block updating, and then it escalates.
My brain had a $500,000, put $500,000 in 2026 as a placeholder.
I think it's going to be more than that to reach the public. I mean, this is going to, we're going to have to do a major public campaign.
I think we have $500,000 set aside in facilities and fund balance in case the bottom fell out of REIT. It was a kind of a reserve for facilities in case the bottom fell out. I mean, I think we're close to $1 million to do the outreach work, the rendering work, the site selection.
We'd either spend it in 2026 or it's rolling into 20. Roll any leftovers into 2027. Right. It's an ongoing cost as you do this.
I put $1 million in there.
I've been talking to other county commissioners about it's like amazing what we hear being spent on this.
And no, it's horrifying. But what do you have a community without a jail? Like, you have to do it. It's like having a road.
We're just going to put everybody on their best behavior.
That's right. We're just ask them to behave.
We're just going to put them in timeout and put them on their best behavior.
So the fund can support a placeholder like that in 2026.
Yeah.
Because if the REIT two
funds come back. And we have that other money we could, if we needed it.
Right, right. And I think there's, when I'm thinking through the communication of it to the public, is that truly planning or is that bond issuance cost?
Is the level of service conversation. So we're going to get that's a presentation planning. That says this is the needs assessment. Mm-hmm. And the need assessment is based on the ideal evaluation of what we need. That's going to come with the price tag. We've got to take that price tag out to the community and say, is this the level of service you're looking for? Do you want a higher level of service? Do you want a lower level of service? My assumption will be that when people see the price, that there will be a, do we really need this? Do we really need that conversation? But maybe they're like, no, we want more. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't predict the people. So, but that part is part of the design and development of what we will be asking for. And then whoever does the schematic design site, all of that, they're going to take that level of service feedback and design around that. So what the community says is, I don't care that this is ideal. I want half that. And they're very clear about that. Then we give them the level of service they're looking for. They're not going to say that because half that isn't going to even get them what they have right now. But, you know, I think that there's a part of this that's part of design that really is about making sure we're right-sizing the facility for what the community's values are. Do they want more rehabilitation space? Are they just lock them up people? Like, we have our values, but we're not the only ones paying for this. So we got to talk to the people and make sure that we're all in alignment about what we're doing. And that feedback goes into the design. So that's got to get paid for as part of the design process. That's how I understand it. Okay, everybody who's involved is nodding kind of the same way. I'm like, I don't want to walk us off a cliff, but we have to take community feedback before we settle final design.
Okay. Anything else, Ryan?
No.
Any other questions of Ryan? Okay, then I really want to get us to talking with the sheriff. Thank you very, very much, everybody, for this enlightening conversation about.
I understand.
Okay. But Commissioner St. Clair will be leaving in about 10 minutes. So I want
5 minutes.
5 minutes? Okay. So I'd like her to at least be part of the conversation with the sheriff.
Thanks, Susie. Good
to move back here.
And Fred, everyone looks good in orange. Come on.
I don't.
Orange is the new black. It's actually gray. Oh, I think you can wear gray and khaki now. Yeah. So you're fine. You're halfway there.
I think you're determined to actually send my jail. We got lots of orange clothes.
They're getting all like worried about federal prison, blah, blah.
But so are like,
I'm like, that's damn. Yeah, cool. Come on.
Much rather. I think they're in prison jail.
I mean,
good morning. Good morning. I know there's a little bit of a time crunch, so I'll try to get to the point, which I'm not usually super good at. So real quickly, my understanding is that we're talking about the possibility of moving into a lease model for patrol car replacement and all the associated stuff that goes with that. The way we currently do this, our fleet stuff is the board budgets, whatever amount of money they do that particular year, we go out and buy however many cars that will cover and the associated parts with that. The actual boots on the ground, how that works is a car gets delivered, a deputy or somebody delivers it to an upfitter. Markings, decals, and stuff come from the peninsula. They get shipped to the upfitter, who is a one-man shop at Zebra Woolley, who also does fire trucks and other things in the county. So oftentimes we're waiting in line, we're moving one car at a time. And the day-to-day management of vehicles getting maintained, vehicles getting delivered to service providers, all that stuff, is essentially consuming a deputy, right? Because that's the way we've always done it. That's the only actual rationale for that. So those things aside, what we're proposing is that we work into a mentality of a phased replacement, so that every 5 years we replace a fifth of the fleet. And we came to the number of five for this particular program because the residual value of the vehicle, the sweet spot for the residual value of the vehicle, is in the end of the fourth year. So as I envision this, and as it's been described to us by the folks we spoke to at the leasing company, is we'll get to the dollar part, because that's the part I don't really want to talk about. But how it would work is essentially we would lease 9 cars a year over a 5-year period. So we'd have a car for 4 years, and it would reach its rotation date, its expiration date or whatever. We just keep moving that forward. In the fifth year, you get the residual value back to the program of the vehicles from the initial first four-year lease, right? So that whole thing just keeps rotating through. It's expensive, just putting it out there, but it's probably much more manageable for the bite-sized piece of it, and the value of the entire project is probably better. And the reason I say that is because of the way budgets work and revenue works. Honestly, learning more about that in the last 3 days than I've learned about it in the last 7 years, which is good, but the ups and downs, right? Some years we can afford to buy the number of cars we need, some years we just can't, and the money just doesn't exist. So for example, using the model that I'm talking about where we did 9 cars a year for over a 5-year period, and that would just keep going as long as we could afford it or as long as it was useful to the county, right? And Chris has got give us a stuff.
All of?
Yeah, I'm gonna at least have one for each commissioner and one for Susan so that we're wrapping our head around the actual numbers.
And this is through the enterprise projects, okay?
Yes.
And would enterprise do all of the labeling and extra outfitting and everything of the vehicle?
We spent a half a day with a company called SPS, Systems for Public Safety. And they are the upfitter that is available to us most geographically close. They're actually in Lakewood. I left there absolutely impressed. So we would be using a separate upfitter who is a part that the lease company works in conjunction with. They will provide us with a far more professionally equipped police car than we're able to get right now. One of the things that they do, which is so simple that I can't believe we didn't think of it, right? Every single vehicle that they put out, whether they're putting it out for Tacoma PD, State Patrol, Montana Highway Patrol, all the organizations they work with are wired exactly the same way. Every single wire in there is labeled. So when there's an issue with, you know, something not working in the car, they can find the wire at the back of the car. They don't have to chase wires and do all the things that when you're using a small upfitter and the model year changes for a car, oftentimes those things are random, right? So this company actually makes a wiring harness for all the accessories. That doesn't mean you have to have all the accessories. What it means is there's a plug available to plug it in. So for example, say 2 years down the road and we're into this thing and the legislature decides that every agency has to have car mounted cameras in addition to body cameras. And we figured out how to pay for that because, you know, legislation. it would literally be plug and play instead of going back and rewiring a car and all that. So there's a ton of advantages. I left the upfitters thinking this is an incredibly professional organization. Customer service was up here, at least in the sales end, to be honest. But we did walk through their entire shop. It's immaculately clean. Everything is organized. Every worker we talked to was completely professional. Every car we saw cars in various stages of, you know, being built and rebuilt because they also have a full-on body shop repair facility, all that kind of stuff. And this particular this particular upfitter is also in the process of, the fact they're the only, there's two certified, manufacturer certified police vehicle upfitters, emergency vehicle upfitters in the country, and they're one of them.
So
the other one's like in Michigan. So
do they then drive what type, what model of car we need to be getting?
From? They don't drive it. They'll get us whatever we want.
Okay.
They do have a relationship with Ford, which is convenient because that's the most popular patrol car out there, right? But they'll get, if we wanted to continue with Chrysler products, which I don't, we've had lots of problems with them recognizing warranty issues, and their dealerships independently decide whether something's covered by warranty, and Chrysler doesn't want anything to do with it. I'm in an $8,000 battle with them right now. So that side conversation, so anyway, we could get whatever we wanted, right? If the community decided that they wanted to do something different than what we're currently doing, we'd have that ability. And the nice thing about both of these particular programs is they're kind of all a car. Ryan, correct me if I go straight here on the conversations you've had, but as far as choice of vehicles, mm-hmm. colors, equipment, anything, the number of vehicles, if you know, a couple of years from now, we got a budget that won't cover what we need. There's flexibility in the number of vehicles. And if we want to go longer or shorter on lease terms, all those things are completely doable and negotiable. We use this model because according to the lease company, this is where the best value is, time for age-wise on a vehicle to get the most residual value.
They do it on age, not mileage?
It's a combination. It's the actual market value. So, and if we have a vehicle, for example, we have a vacancy and a vehicle doesn't get used as much throughout the four-year life cycle that has a lower mileage on it, and we go, there's no point trading this one in, we just don't move that car, right? We can give it another cycle. So the convenience and flexibility of it and the overall improvement to the management of fleet is absolutely a value. That brings us to the conversation about cost. You've got a little bit of a breakdown in front of you. It's as simple as we can make it and as clear as it's the best data we have. And as you can see, it's pretty affordable the first year, and it gets less and less affordable as you get to the end because you're
multiple. Is there a bell curve to it? Is it at some point when you've replaced your fleet enough that you've got stability in the fleet rotation program, you should have a bell curve to this cost.
Well, the only impact would be in that every fifth year or every, once you get years down the road, you'll have every time you cycle out a set, you'll get the residual value back toward the contract on that, right? So I'm going to make up numbers. I have no idea what their numbers were, but if we were paying, you know, $1,000 per unit and the residual value was $200 at the end, we would get, you know, that back. Obviously, the numbers are much bigger than that. But.
So my apologies. But I do, I'll reach out to you because I had exactly those questions of the budget line item and where those offsets will happen and how those timings of those offsets. And I'll reach back to you. My apologies.
Okay.
Susan, can you remind me what we write now budget for the sheriff's cars every year?
We do a set aside in current expense.
Right.
Last year,
we do it every year with the same set aside, don't we?
Right. It's around 360, yep. 369, something I think like yep. that. And before I forget to mention that, we did not order vehicles with 25 money because the conversation was going in this direction.
Mm-hmm.
So we have money from this budget to make the first payment. So
can I ask? I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Johnson,
no, go ahead. It's okay.
One of the things that we've talked about in previous conversations is the maintenance costs that we're experiencing now with engine rebuilds, this program would alleviate a lot of those costs. So it would be more basic costs that you're dealing with. And that would also be a cost savings to the county.
One of the reasons that's true is because the vehicles that are costing us the most money are the vehicles that are outside of the warranty period. The $8,000 bill I mentioned earlier is a oil cooler problem that was inherent with that particular engine. We paid, so I'm not going to call out names of dealerships, but we had a dealership that we use regularly that serves most of Whidbey and portions of Camino Island because of the convenience factor. We went to a different dealer who said, that's not covered under warranty. It's in the car. It's literally in warranty, period. And we got into this ridiculous discussion about, well, yeah, the engine's covered, but the things that are bolted to the engine are not covered by the warranty. So I'm literally in a battle with Stellantis Corporation, wherever they're housed right now. And we've got to the point where they're not returning my phone calls and emails, but because that they're arguing that A, that vehicle, they're not arguing that it's outside of warranty. They're saying, yeah, well, the oil cooler that keeps the engine from blowing up is not covered under the engine warranty, which is ridiculous, right? So every other dealer just honored it. So we had that issue. In this particular case, though, these vehicles would, the lifespan, the rotation period would keep them most likely, if unless they change their mileage warranty, we would probably be able to keep them 90% of the time under warranty. So we wouldn't have transmissions and giant expenses that we're replacing. Now, we've had cars that we've actually changed motors in, and, you know, and that's a
but seven or even eight if we were outside of a warranty period, let's say, which we wouldn't be in a 5-year, we're leasing their car, right? And so that part of what I thought we got with this was they were doing the major maintenance and making sure that they're getting the checkups regularly. And I mean, they'll say, like, you've got to get these cars in for service. They're tracking all of that. And somebody's getting an email that says, you're getting an oil change, so you can't run your oil to nothing and your engine blows up. Like, they literally have kind of, they've idiot proofed it for us.
They can feed us to water. We still have to drink, right?
Like, but I mean, at that point, we're going to drink the water. So if you get an email that says this car's got to go in, it's time for its thing, and you know your equity is tied to that maintenance, you're not trying to remember on your own. You're not waiting for the light to come on in the car. We're not getting to those stages. We're just on this regular. This car has this many miles on it. It's time for new tires. Like, we might pay for the tires, but what we're not going to do is have a major expense associated with a tire blowout, let's say, right? Because we're doing that right there. And they're telling you when to do that. Is that right? Because that was one of my sales pitch pieces that I was susceptible to.
There is absolutely that maintenance management part of it. Now, the other thing that I didn't really mention, and I haven't figured out how to capture a dollar amount yet, is this is a complete vehicle price that we get from the dealership. Literally, here's your keys, go to work.
Yeah.
So we're building in the cost of radios, so we're not having antiquated technology every 5 or 6 years in the tech side of the car. Mm-hmm. Light bars, all the things that change, the technology just constantly changes. The most expensive portion of that is radios. And we've been piecemealing radios, and we're pretty well caught up as far as having today's appropriate technology, you know, the whole P200.
I don't think radios is on.
We talked about that with the upfitter. So you didn't include in that number?
No, I didn't make this. This is a they.
I'm sorry. So I
chart was better, by the way.
I might have to verify what I'm talking about, but the conversation that we had was that the price would include whatever.
You're correct. So yes.
It was a complete patrol car, including detail or decals, whatever we want. That's the price.
Yep.
So I know you're worried about the price. But
I'm only worried about you approving the price.
I know I'm also worried about the price of year, well, getting to year 4, year 5, right? The carrying costs of the compounding leases is what is nerve wracking until you start getting to the trade-ins. But I figured it at, we spend about $400,000 a year. I know last year we did less. I've seen us do more. So on average, we're setting aside for like 5 cars a year in fund balance, right? That puts us at $2 million at the end of 5 years. If I understand this chart, which I understood the one that you tried to simplify or better than this simplified one. But what I'm looking at here is that we would spend the most costly year would be year 5 at $739, right?
Yeah.
Plus the $135?
Mm-hmm. The $135 doesn't go away. That's every year.
That's every year. Okay. So we're at $739 plus $135. But on year 5 also, do we have any trade-ins on year 5 or no trade-ins in year 5?
We would. That would be the first batch.
First batch. I didn't know if five was you had to get through that year and then you traded it in on six.
So my understanding is that fifth year is the year where you take advantage of the residual value. Yeah.
Okay. And the current fleet has value also that's not really realized, but they would surplus those also for us and get a higher dollar value than what we're getting now.
So if we looked at like this first year, you already have, we have 300-ish, 350-ish in that fund.
$360
$524, actually, because they haven't spent all the money that you guys had put aside before.
So we have we'd have the cars we turn in, and we have the fund balance. And so that year is covered. If we set aside the same allocation this year that we would plan on doing, we're kind of operating a year ahead until we hit year five. But year five, you have those replacement things in there. How am I doing? And understand.
Actually, at 594, we almost have 2 years worth of.
Right, right. But I think what Commissioner Johnson.
You can just say
he's running through the three. It's like kids. the county would continue to fund through current expense 360, just to try to stay ahead of what
we're ready to go for. Well, because there's fixed costs, right? So if you're ahead this year and if we sat this year out and we didn't budget anything for it, then we're hitting these actual costs. But since we have fund balance and we just keep replacing that fund balance, by the time we hit the most expensive year, we've got some buildup in there that will offset that year, right?
Help smooth it out.
Right.
I honestly think that's what the way Ryan explained it to me a while back, and it took me a while to get my head wrapped around it. Ryan's had a handle on this in his head for a long time. So
I mean, I think where your scenario is a little different than our overall fleet is that we have been making a car replacement allocation every year for certain things. So if we continued on that pattern, and we're already, it works also because there's fund balance. So if we continue on that set aside pattern of this is what we're going to spend, we're always operating kind of a year in advance a little bit. Then the big year hits, but you start getting those trade-ins. So that's not really the actual number. This is not really, unless this is the actual number and they've already backed out the trade-in values of these cars.
We haven't even done that calculation with
them. I don't think they can, because they don't know.
So this is the worst case scenario I'm looking at right here is the 800 something.
That's what the way I understand it.
The extra 800,000. It might be worthwhile to ask them the question, if we were in the fifth year, what would today's dollars look like for our trade-in?
That conversation is occurring, and they've requested specific data that we've got to compile.
They want to manage mileage,
and that's underway. So. Yeah.
It's helpful for the planning.
I don't think we're going to get a hard answer, because if I was in business, I couldn't tell you what your car is going to be worth in 5 years, because I don't know if you're going to bounce it off of trees or anything.
Right, but I think they kind of have an estimate, right? Like, let's say it's $50,000. Well, that's not true, because we didn't buy it for that much. Let's say it's $5,000 a car, and we're trading in 9 cars. That gives a number that gets reduced off of this amount, right? And that's low. We're not. For $5,000, you can keep driving. So I think also what we had talked about a little bit was the liability of having unreliable cars on the road, especially as it relates to law enforcement. Mostly just because the way you utilize your cars is different than we should be utilizing public health cars, of course. Public health should not be accelerating at the same rate, stopping at the same rate. You know, there's just a different type of use. And so the risk for us of having our officers in vehicles that are not high performing vehicles is higher. And that one single claim is $100,000 out of the county's pocket right off the bat before we even hit insurance. So you factor that risk in, and there's pretty good risk motivators. Plus then we get a deputy back on the road, right? And not doing all the detail work that they've been doing for us this whole time, which is lovely and thankful for, but that's not really what they signed up to be a sheriff's officer for. So sheriff's deputy for. So get that person back to their intended purpose and passion. That seems good. And then the maintenance piece. that we're not going to be making those big maintenance costs, transmission repairs, and
where
all.
Where are we at? We're about 100 now. We have
I'm just flabbergasted.
Well, it makes a little. I'm having an easier time with this model actually than the entire fleet because there are so many bigger variables in the entire fleet. Like yesterday, when we were talking with IT, they want to use their own cars. Our modeling to replace these cars doesn't work if we're paying out mileage to people to drive their own cars. It only works if we have full utilization of the cars. In this instance, I don't have any of that pressure. Nobody's going to use their own personal vehicle to play sheriff. And if they do, you've got a bigger problem than the car.
We actually have a policy that says you can't do that. So,
there's a little... There's a lot more going on in the entire fleet conversation. In this, it's much cleaner and clearer. And also, part of the reason was that we did the allocation was to make sure that if there was ever law and justice money available, it typically said non-supplant. And so we were trying to keep high expenses out of it. It looks like the new legislation does not say non-supplant. It says operational costs associated with. So that kind of old school worry that we hung on to for a long time doesn't apply if we make this operational.
I don't know that I can sell it any better than you did because it sounds like you're kind of a buyer, but just a couple of points.
I'm not good on negotiations.
We did a summary of vehicle maintenance cost or repair cost. It's all, unfortunately, we weren't able to break it out. But we spend about $127,000 a year maintaining vehicles.
Oh, so we need to add that.
I'd probably say half of that is you know, not regular maintenance. It's, you know, something broke and we replaced an engine.
So there's a $60,000 pickup probably right there.
And we've had two events that I'm aware of in the last 6 months where deputies actively responding to calls have had their car quit. And both of them, unfortunately, are related to the same problem with the Chrysler products that we have. Dump all their oil in the street. So they're taken off the road. They got to get their car towed. They got to go get a spare vehicle from someplace.
And somebody else has to respond to that call. Because by the way, if I made that phone call, your car troubles are not my problem right then, right? Mm-hmm. Like what I want is for someone to show up and save me. Because I'm high.
Yeah, that then almost, it gets us a lot closer. Yeah.
So the obvious question, are we okay then to move forward with getting a contract set up and move it through the process?
You think? I'm looking at budget because if she's nervous at all, she's got to say now.
We got both companies are ready to click send for us on the upfitting and the lease project.
It's a good place to start.
Yep. So we've continued to show that fund balance in the current expense fund balance projections. But the leasing we would hard budget for over in the motor pool fund, which right now we transfer when we make purchases. So, but that would be more, it would be more obvious in the budget what that is.
But we could set aside one-time money still in that fund and pay the lease out of that.
Yep. By transfer,
mm-hmm. which I get is kind of unnecessary, but it's psychologically reassuring.
Yeah, it's clear. It tells a story. I think it's good work.
So you'll need to bring the contract.
Yeah, we'll do the regular contract review thing, and we'll get that scheduled as soon as we can get it back and get it through the contract review process. Thank you. This was a much more comfortable conversation than I thought.
Well, you did a lot of pre-work, and Ryan's done a lot of pre-work on the big motor pool. And there, it's just that one just has a few more variables, but this one feels much more straightforward and cleaner. And I think if we're really headed in the direction that this is the place to start and really kind of make sure that this is working kind of how we think it's working. And then it gives us a little more time to work out some of these other policy kinks we have about people who want to drive their own vehicles when we're really counting on their utilization of these county vehicles to pay off the leases.
On another note, yes, it makes it more convenient, but this is a lot more valuable to the sheriff's office than just there's morale tied to this, their safety tied to this, as well as to go with that. So I appreciate you having the perspective that you have it. Let us move forward.
It's probably worth a 1% in pay increase in morale alone, don't you think?
I'm okay with that.
I'm just saying, there's probably a morale cash equivalent.
Well, I mean, there is value. And that's my point being that it's more than the value of the vehicles. So, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Good job doing all the research and work. Brian, can we say for just 1 second?
Before, sure.
So yesterday when Dean came in, he was talking about his people driving the vehicles. And one of the things that we realized in that conversation was that if we're paying staff the mileage to drive their own personal vehicles, and we're building a model around a fleet that really requires fund reimbursement in order to ensure that we're covering those leases, at some point we're going to need to make, and then part of the reason is we don't have enough cars available, or, you know, there's different or they're not in a good location. So there's reasons why people want to drive them. But what it triggered for the board was a realization that we don't want to double pay for miles. So if you're locked into a lease, we're paying basically for mileage used because we're not billing anywhere. And if we pay an employee, we're paying that employee miles traveled. Mm-hmm. Now, instead of paying 50 cents a mile, we're paying $1 a mile. So what was good about that is that this leasing conversation is far enough along that we understand it. What it though did point out was we have to have a very clear policy about this, so those cars are in full utilization in order to bill out all the different accounts to make sure we can pay for the lease. See what I'm saying?
So that the only way anyone would be able to use their own car is if there is not a county car available.
Right. And then, so I think, again, I understand that your life is going in a different direction without us, but somewhere we need to document as it relates to the cars that there's some policy work that we need to do. I mean, we need to really make sure we're understanding, are the rates right? Then also we have to have clear policy that says you will use a county vehicle if one is available. And then we also have to make sure we know how many cars we need to have in that fleet. Human Services is telling me that they need access to more cars and they have money to buy a car. I'm unclear as to how. I said you can buy a car now, but it's going to go into the motor pool and anybody's going to be able to use it. They're like, no. So I think that maybe it's not even the financial model as much as it's the logistical way that we operate related to our cars.
I think that's correct. And I think it's a lot of the culture around having a car and the scheduling of cars, because I think there's plenty of cars, but they want to have their own car, that person does. So they're going to have to share interdepartmentally a lot and figure that out. So
I think some of that policy work is maybe the part that wasn't, at least I didn't articulate, is what I was seeing as problems. I was just like hung up on the money piece. I think the money piece does work if you have a traditional model, but we still have these kind of like silo pieces, and also then this choice option of, well, I'm going to take my own car and get reimbursed. That really, if everybody did that and we were in this lease arrangement, we've got a problem. So I think we need policy work around, and I get that you're leaving, but we need to pass it on to Laura or whomever is going to make, like, continue trying to work on this, is that these pieces need to be really, these problems have to be solved before we enter into a lease thing, because we don't want to be chasing the money and the leases trying to get them paid for because we didn't change our behaviors.
Yep.
Okay.
Understood.
Good. That was all. That's good.
Thank you. And Ryan, when is your last day?
August 8th.
Okay.
So I'll be here for the jail feasibility discussion on the 6th.
That got moved.
To?
Because you're.
Oh. Well,
I'm not going to be here on August 8th.
6th.
I'm here. I'm just not here on the 7th.
Oh, but you're going to be here.
We're going to be back.
Please.
I didn't move the. I was
under the impression you were not going to be here. So that's why.
I kept the work. I got the work session worked out. What I didn't get worked out was the budget, but it's raw. It's Judge Costick's. And I've met with him. And I'll listen to the work session, and then we're not going to make any decisions anyway. So it will give me time to talk with Susan and Catherine and see, and then I'll hear what the, my colleagues think about it. And then, so I can catch up on that.
My understanding is he'll have a detailed presentation, so it'll be easy for you to follow.
Thank you, Dean. Thanks, Dean.
Thank you.
Okay. So, but I'll be there at the work session. Okay, sorry. I should have communicated better.
Well, all right. So are we done here? Anything else, Susan?
I don't have anything further.
So if nothing more, this special 2026 budget workshop is adjourned.